Welcome to my house. Welcome to the Structure Talk podcast, a production of Structure Tech Home Inspections. My name is Ruben Saltzman. I'm your host alongside building science geek, Tessa Murray. We help home inspectors up their game through education, and we help homeowners to be better stewards of their houses. We've been keeping it real on this podcast since 2019, and we are also the number one home inspection podcast in the world, according to my mom. Welcome back to the show. Tessa, great to see you. How you doing on this gorgeous sunny day where it feels like spring is right around the corner?
Hey, Ruben. I'm doing well. I'm glad that the snow has melted mostly. And here we are in April, starting to feel like second spring.
Yeah, it's been officially for a month, but it's feeling like it now.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Can't complain. Life is good.
Good. Well, you know, I'm excited because we just got done recording a three-part series with Tom Harris, and we did a deep dive into everything spray foam, which was very informative, but extremely technical as well.
Yeah.
And I learned a ton from him, and hopefully, you know, so did our listeners. So if you haven't, if you want to learn more about spray foam and you didn't listen to those podcasts, go check them out with Tom Harris. But I'm kind of excited for today. Ruben, you and I were discussing off air, you know, what should we talk about next? And you've discussed kind of, you know, in the past over different podcast episodes, you've brought up different projects that you've done on your house or different experiments you've conducted as well, which is always very interesting and sometimes hilarious. But I thought, you know what, why don't we consolidate that discussion into one podcast and highlight some of, you know, the best updates and improvements and successes and some of the worst experiences you've had as well. And so what do you think about that? Should we dive into that today?
That sounds great. I feel like I'm going to be doing most of the talking, Tess. I mean,
you are. This is a show about you today.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to do one about you next week then. And I'm going to pick the topic.
You've got more than enough content and experience to fill a full podcast today. So
all right.
I'm excited.
Well, you prompted me a little before we started recording. So the first one that came to mind, Tess, and this was like one of the biggest projects that I've ever undertaken, and it also went catastrophically wrong, which was me redoing the when I used to live in Minneapolis, I had a story and a half house, and it's when we decided to redo the upper level, the half story, or whatever you want to call it.
I thought you were going a different direction with this story. Okay. All right. Yes. Your story and a half house in Minneapolis. Please. Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Oh, no, that's fine. So when we bought this house, it was kind of finished at the upper level. They had a rough-in for a bathroom up there. There were water lines, and there was a sealed-off line that was illegally tapped into the vent for the first floor toilet. And it was kind of set up where you could set up a sink and a toilet. And I did set up a sink and a toilet. We had them up there for a little while because I had a cousin living up there. And then when he moved out, it was like, all right, we're going to redo this. We're going to make this really nice. It had paneling on the slant walls and on the walls, you know, just that thin stuff. It was brown and dark and super ugly. And the insulation was like this paper stuff. It was called Kimsol. And it was terrible and so messy. And so we started our project by kind of gutting it up there. We took down all the paneling. We took down all the insulation. It was the world's biggest mess. We removed all the plumbing fixtures, capped off the water lines, and not really thinking, I don't know what I was thinking, Tess. This was so stupid. We did this when winter was coming. I mean, we did it like in November or something. And what happens when you take out all of the insulation at your half story? It gets really cold.
They're losing a lot of heat.
You're losing a lot of heat and it gets darn cold. Well, it got so cold that one of those pipes burst. And I say burst, I mean, I had a shutoff valve on the end of the pipe and the shutoff valve popped off. Yeah. Tessa's covering her mouth for the listeners.
I've never heard you tell that part of the story before. And this is new.
Well, it's because it's so embarrassingly stupid.
That's terrible.
Now that, you know, it's been about two decades, I can talk about it. And so what happens when the shutoff valve on a half inch water line pops off? You get a lot of water coming out of that pipe. And it happened while nobody was home. So Anna gets home from work at 5 o'clock or whatever. I'm doing a home inspection and I did not answer the phone. You know, she may have called once and I didn't answer because I'm talking with the client. And her next call is to my dad asking, where's the shutoff valve for the house? Because when she walks in, there is water pouring out of everything. I mean, it's coming out of the doorways. It's coming out of the light fixtures. It's coming down the stairs. I mean, it is the world's biggest mess. So that was a remodel gone horribly wrong.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible. And we've talked about on the past podcast episodes, failures as home inspectors. And it is the worst feeling if you have a tub that overflows that you forget about. I've had that happen. And just, you know, water dripping through one light fixture is enough to make you want to die. So you can only imagine what you were feeling when that happened.
Oh, yeah, that was awful. And I wasn't even there. I just came home to see the aftermath. I didn't get to see it as bad as my wife saw it. I probably got home about half hour after she had shut the water off. And my goodness, what a mess. And so there's water in the walls. What did you do? We filed an insurance claim. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
We cleaned up everything that we could there's water, standing water in the basement. It made its way down to there, boxes, stuff soaked. You know, we cleaned up as much as we could. And we spent the next couple of days living at my parents' house because our house was kind of uninhabitable at that point. Everything was just destroyed. And we ended up having to gut the first floor bathroom, which was the only bathroom at that point. So we had to gut that bathroom. We tore out all the walls. We ended up having to semi-gut one of the bedrooms too, take down the ceiling and the walls because there was tons of water in there. And that was, you know, a couple of good learning experiences. Number one, I knew there was tons of water in the wall. And I had another home inspector come out. This is before we had invested in infrared cameras. And I knew there was home inspectors using infrared cameras to find water in walls. And I thought this would be a good alternative to doing intrusive testing. You could just use an infrared camera instead. So I had this home inspector come out and I said, let's scan this wall with your IR camera. I want to see the water. Well, we scanned that wall and it was all the same temperature, Tess. The dry areas, wet areas, it was all the same temperature.
Couldn't tell.
Why? Because infrared cameras do not find water. They find temperature differences. Yeah. And to get a temperature difference, you need to have water evaporating. If your water is just closed up within a wall and it can't evaporate, you don't have cooler temps. So we scanned that wall and it showed nothing. And then I took my hammer and I busted the wall open because we were waiting for it. And I grabbed the insulation and I squeezed it and I just squeezed water out of it. I mean, it was soaked.
Oh my gosh.
And the infrared camera couldn't see it.
You know, what an important lesson. And that is definitely, that's a story that helped educate the entire Structure Tech team of inspectors, I think, as to how to use an infrared camera responsibly and things that you could miss with an infrared camera that other people are looking for with it. And So you know what? I think there's a silver lining to that whole experience, Ruben. And I didn't realize that that's where that story came from.
Yes. Yep. This is closing the loop on that.
Okay.
We ended up moving back into the house. We kept the bathroom as functional as possible for as long as we could. I mean, we gutted all the walls, but we left the toilet. We took the toilet out. We took all the flooring out, and then we put the toilet back in because you need a toilet. And for the shower surround and the bathtub, I think we ended up leaving the bathtub in place. We ended up reusing it, and we stapled poly to all of the walls, to the studs, and we left the shower head in place so I could still take a shower in my gutted bathroom.
Oh my gosh.
But there's no insulation on the walls and it's dead of winter, so you had to have a space heater going there nonstop. It was, and then there was no sink, so you'd have to wash your hands in the kitchen. It was just, you know, it was that was rough in it. And this was before we had kids. I couldn't imagine doing this with kids, but
no.
Talk about a rough remodel. It was,
oh my gosh.
So, you know, we ended up having to do a lot of projects simultaneously.
Oh my gosh. Was it lath and plaster that you had to remove from all the interior walls?
Yep.
Oh no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, huge project. It was already a big project, but it became a huge project.
It became a huge project. But when it was all said and done, we ended up putting in a very nice master. No, not, can't say master.
Owner's
primary suite.
Primary suite.
Yeah. Primary suite at the upper level. We put in a nice tiled shower and, you know, a nice double sink and all that. I mean, the bathroom was just gorgeous and the bedroom turned out gorgeous. I mean, it was beautiful when we were all done. I still miss that bedroom. It's the nicest bedroom I've ever had. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow. So, and that was the house that you did the spray foam in the slant as well, right?
That's right.
Or in the hot roof. Oh.
Yeah, we did a hot roof. We did closed cell foam. And I kept thinking about that project when we had Tom Harris talking about all of these different things with spray foam and all these things that could be done wrong. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I knew 20 years ago what I know now, that project would have gone very differently. And I would have overseen a lot more of it instead of just trusting these guys. Hey, they're the pros. They know what they're doing.
For sure. For sure. Do you think that the foam was applied correctly? Did you ever notice any issues with it pulling away from the rafters or discoloration or off-gassing or anything like that?
You know, we ended up covering it up pretty quickly after it was all put in. I ended up putting the drywall up over it pretty quickly. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. And another lesson too, that I think you shared with the team as well. And we use this, you know, to help educate home buyers as well, that, you know, even if you put spray foam in between the rafters, unless you have some sort of continuous ventilation or continuous insulation installed on the underside of the roof deck across the rafters or on the exterior and build up the roof decking, and have additional ventilation installed, then you will likely still have snow melt because of all the heat loss happening through the thermal bridging, through the rafters, right? And that's something, is that something you learned the hard way doing that project as well?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, it made things way better. I still had snow on my roof when all my neighbors had bare shingles exposed.
Yeah.
So it was much better than it used to be. But it didn't completely lick the ice dams. When you get heavy snow, I would still get some ice dams. So I would have done it differently had I known then what I know now.
Hey. Yep.
So that was that project.
A lot of lessons learned from that house. Thank you, house.
Yep. For sure. And you know, it segues into another thing that we've talked about on the show, which is just some nice bathroom remodel hacks. Some of my best tips for remodeling a bathroom.
Yeah. These are some wins that you've shared in past podcasts, I think. And it'd be nice just to hear a little recap of some things that you've done to upgrade your bathrooms.
Yeah.
You've got some luxurious bathrooms in your house.
I've done a bunch of them. One of them, which I just absolutely love, is putting speakers in the wall. you fish the wires, and when the walls are wide open, boy, it's a piece of cake. But I've retrofitted on my existing house too, where I fished wires up through the wall and I put speakers in the wall, just computer speakers. You know, it doesn't need to be anything super expensive, like a $100 set of computer speakers, put a little subwoofer in the cabinet down below. And all you've got sticking out of the wall is a little jack, and you plug in your Amazon or Alexa device. I'm hoping mine doesn't activate here. Oh, I named mine computer. I'll say it quietly so it doesn't start talking to me. But you just plug that in there, and then you can talk and get music and whatever you need when you're shaving or showering or whatever. It's great.
True. Do you have discussions? Is that where you plan out your day and you get help organizing things and you send yourself, you know, memos and notes, and or are you just jamming out? Are you listening to music?
I'm just jamming out. Or if I do think of something that the family needs to know about, you know, you do whatever, Alexa, make an announcement. And we've got these little pucks. You know, those things are like $20. So we've got them all over the house. And so we kind of use it as our built-in home intercom system for each other.
Oh my gosh. See, I don't use anything like that, and I never have. For some reason, it just kind of, I know that our devices are listening to us, like our cell phones and all of that, but it weirds me out to think that there's these devices that are listening all the time and then filtering your ads and filtering commercials and all that stuff. It just feels like an invasion of my privacy.
Yeah,
especially located in the bathroom.
Yeah, you're right. It surely is, but oh well.
I should just get over it though because that's the way the world is, you know, is changing. So
yeah.
I can't fight it.
I love that upgrade for bathrooms. Another one I did, and in the one I got now, was installing one of these mirrors that's got lighting built into it. It's got this nice light strip going around it. Makes you feel like you're in a hotel. That was kind of my little splurge. I absolutely love that mirror. It's my favorite part of the bathroom. In-floor heat. If you've got tile floor in a basement, I strongly recommend putting in in-floor heat. That is a great upgrade to have.
Even if it's not a basement, any tiled floor always feels cool, I think.
It does. You're right. I agree with you. Yeah, that can be done anywhere. And I've got a bunch of other ones, but those are my favorite ones. The speakers, though, gosh, that it is so inexpensive. Everybody should have it.
Your bathroom is your getaway place, it sounds like, Ruben. That's where you go to just shut yourself in and get away from the world and your fam. Spend some time with your speakers and your smart mirror. Come out a new man.
For 10 minutes. I'll admit. I'm a power showerer. I am in there for 2 minutes. I do not dilly-dally, but, you know, it is great. It is great.
I love it. Okay, so those are some good success stories of different projects that you've taken on for your house. Yeah. Do you have any other stories about projects you've done on your house that either you would like to share that have been, you know, very successful or maybe not so successful?
Well, I'll share one I've shared before, which falls into both categories, which is the point of use water heater in my kitchen. It's it's a cute little 1.5 gallon, or maybe no, it's a 2.5 gallon water heater. It's got hot water plumbed directly into it, so you never run out of hot water. When you turn on the kitchen faucet, instead of waiting 2 minutes to get hot water, hot water comes out the second you turn on the faucet. I mean, it is instantly hot. It hardly costs anything to operate this thing. And by the time you've drained the hot water out of that thing, you've got hot water refilling it. So it is a perfect solution. The water heater itself cost about $150, $200, something like that. The installation took about 5 minutes. It couldn't have been any easier. Absolutely love that thing. Now, on the downside, I know I've shared this before. I think we did a whole episode on this. When you install a water heater, technically you're supposed to have a drain pan. And I never really thought about this thing as a traditional water heater, so I never installed the drain pan. Well, you know where this is going. It leaked. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. wake up one morning, go down to my exercise room, and there's water coming out of the ceiling there. That was an insurance claim. Ended up replacing the water heater. I ended up putting in a drain pan this time, but it's got nowhere to drain to. So it's mm-hmm. just a pan. And I put a water sensor in there, and the water sensor wirelessly connects to an emergency shutoff valve. It's made by Guardian, and it's like a $300 system. And I've got these little pucks. I've got one underneath my dishwasher. I've got one under my water heater. I've got one. I got them all over the place, these little pucks. So if something starts leaking, it shuts off the water to the house. So that was a good addition. And this time when my water heater leaked for the second time after like 18 months, it shut off all the water to the house, and I had no catastrophic damage to deal with.
Yeah. Man, yeah. You know what, Ruben? I appreciate how you you take these risks, you do these things, these little upgrades, you make it sound so easy and efficient, but then that stupid little thing cost you so much headache when it flooded, but then you learn from it. And now you upgraded your whole house and you've got this cool system in place that prevents any other, you know, appliances from damaging your house if they leak or fail.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
That's the goal. And, you know, I think what it comes down to is just being persistent.
You're resilient. Yes.
We can say that. I don't give up easily, I guess. You know, we had Dr. Ben Fransky on the podcast earlier this year, and he had joked about how IT guys aren't necessarily any smarter. They just don't give up. And they'll keep trying stuff. At least that's what he said about himself. I got a good chuckle out of that. I thought that's about accurate. Doesn't mean I'm going to do the projects any better than the next person, mm-hmm. but I'm willing to make mistakes and I'll do it again.
Yeah. Well, and thank you for doing that, Ruben, being willing to make mistakes, learn from that and share, because we're all learning from your failures as well. And failures is harsh. We're all learning from these experiences that you're having.
Failing forward. That's what John Maxwell would say.
Yep. You learn and you grow.
Yeah.
For sure.
And, you know, I got another one that I'd put in the positive and negative category.
Yeah.
At my last house, I had an unfinished basement and my office was down in the basement, and I'd spend the whole day working down there, and I got tired of going up and down the stairs every time I had to use the bathroom. So I said, I'm putting in a urinal. We already got a rough in for a bathroom down here. I'm putting in my own urinal. No more of these trips up and down. And I ran the water lines over to the area. And I know that on a flush-o-meter, which is that thing that you hit on a urinal to get the water to flush, so there was something in the Minnesota Plumbing Code that said you're supposed to have a 3/4 inch line going to that. And I thought, well, I better do a 3/4 inch line, get a really good flush out of this. I don't want to have too small of a flush. And
you're trained to follow the manufacturer's installation instructions. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to do this right. I'm not going to cheap out and do a 1/2 inch line. Who would do that? So 3/4, the difference between 3/4 and 1/2, it's substantial when you're trying to bend PEX tubing and get it to go through your floor joist and, you know, making these little holes in the floor joist to run through and trying to bend it right. Like, it is a pain in the butt because you're on a ladder and you're trying to bend the stuff and you're twisting and all that. And man, it was so much work to run that. And side note, here's a tip for you. If you're going to bore holes in your floor joists, if you're going to drill holes, always look at the other side of the joist to figure out what you're going to be boring into. Yeah. So what do you think it was, Tess? Was it a water pipe or was it an electrical wire?
Well, you're still here. Hopefully it was a water pipe.
No, it was a wire. I went right through a wire. There was a big spark. And of course, it shorted the wire. So my circuit breaker did its job and it killed the circuit right away. But
yeah,
I ruined my nice boring drill bit. It put a big nick in it when it arced.
It could have been a lot worse, though.
It could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. Yeah. And then, of course, I had to patch the wire. You got to put in a couple of junction boxes to splice it together and all that. And it's like, okay, there's an extra hour of my time that I didn't budget for. And I ruined a drill bit. So always look on the other side. Waterline would have been a lot more of a mess. I'll say that.
It would have. Yeah. If your basement's finished, for sure, too.
Yeah.
Although in that area is probably concrete. Anyways. So
it was great getting the urinal in. I mean, I finally did. I put in a sink too, so I could wash my hands, of course.
Great for you. How did Anna feel about it?
She was a little bit weirded out. I did this when she was out of town. She and the kids were out of town. And so they were out of town for like 2 days. I said, you know, when you come back, there may or may not be a urinal down there. And she kind of rolled her eyes. She's like, it's your space. And, you know, surprise, here we go. But
let me just stop this and pause for a second. You were running up and down the stairs to use the bathroom. So instead of installing a toilet and making it a functional bathroom for anyone in the basement, you decided to go with a urinal?
Yeah, it's my space. And I've always wanted a urinal in my house. I mean, what guy wouldn't want that?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Continue.
I will say, I eventually did put in a toilet down there too, but it was all just wide open. I mean, it looked so cheesy. No, I sold the house like open. That. You know,
yeah, there's a lot of houses where they claim there's two bathrooms and you go into the basement and it's just a toilet in the middle of an unfinished room.
this was not listed as a quarter bath, half bath, any of that. It was not listed in any of the pictures. It was just a little surprise for anyone coming through like, oh, what's this?
Right, so and, urinal here. Yes. Yeah. Honey, we're getting this house.
Yeah. Apparently the husband really got a kick out of it. I don't know what guy wouldn't like that.
Oh my gosh. Hilarious. Okay. I thought there was going to be something that happened with the 3/4 inch line.
Oh yeah. About that. Okay. So here's the deal. So I put in a huge pipe. As it turns out, I didn't need to because on the flush-o-meter, when you flush it, it's got this little adjustment screw, which controls how much water comes out with a flush. So I get it all plumbed in, it's all connected. I turn on the water, I give it the first test flush, and the water just rages out of this thing with so much velocity. It shoots all over me, all over the floor. I mean, it is coming out fast and furious. So I dial that screw down about halfway. Same thing, all over the place.
Oh, no.
I dial the screw down more and more and more. I turn the screw all the way off. Flush it, nothing comes out. I give the screw like a quarter turn, and then it's the perfect flush.
Oh my gosh.
So all of this time I'm wrestling with this 3/4 inch line, and a half inch would have been way more than enough water to get a great flush out of this. So huge waste of time and effort. That's what it comes down to.
The moral of the story, for anyone listening that wants to install a urinal, you only need a half inch line.
Yeah. I'm sure there's just thousands of people who are going to appreciate that advice.
Oh my gosh. Man, that's pretty funny. Yep. That's pretty good. Oh man. Okay. Well, I know that you've got another one that I would say is also a win and a fail category. I'm thinking...
Oh, the Christmas lights? Christmas lights. That's a win and a fail. I just talked about that recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say if you want the whole story, go back and listen to the podcast we recorded, I think, in the fall of 2023 or winter of 2023. Mm-hmm. But what the short version is, I decided to install permanent LED lights on my house. And Amazon had a sale on this kit. It was a few hundred bucks. And I spent a ton of time in the cold. I didn't do it at the right time. I mean, it was freezing out. My hands were going numb, but you can't wear gloves if you need the dexterity. Tons of ladder work in the freezing cold. I had to rent a 40-foot ladder to get to the highest portions of my house.
Oh my gosh.
I only own a 28-foot extension ladder.
Yeah, 40 feet. That's 40 scary. Feet. Did you help with that, right?
Yeah, I had my wife, I had Anna and my son, Cy, out there helping me. It was like three people to set this up. And I'll tell you, Tess, after I was done messing around with that 40-foot ladder, I grabbed my 28-foot ladder, and it felt like a dinky little toy.
It's all relative, isn't it?
It's all relative. Yeah. And I thought, who has a hard time with a 28-foot ladder? This is nothing. But yeah, it. I got it all put in, and I thought I was going to make it all nice and custom, and I had all these splices in there. Turns out you can't splice it. If you cut it, it don't work. It's not like a traditional light set. Each individual light has its own address, and it needs to go in order. So I ended up having to basically redo a huge section of it at the upper level. It took me many weeks to get that done. It was supposed to be a relatively easy project. It's done now, but it was one of the most frustrating projects I have ever done in my life.
Which is saying something, because you have experienced a lot of, projects not going the way you intended, and you always pivot and bounce back from them. But this one, I remember you were just pulling out your hair, and it was, it was painful.
It was demoralizing. Yeah.
Okay, but since then, have you been able to illuminate your house the way that you wanted to with these different holidays and seasonal changes?
Oh, heck yeah. We had pink and white on Valentine's Day. We had we had like all green on St. Patrick's Day. I don't know what's coming up next here.
Yeah,
I forgot to do something for Easter. I didn't think of Easter colors. I should have. Man.
That would have been what would you have chosen?
I don't know. Something pastel, I guess, right?
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe some light yellow and blue. My whole weekend was spent volunteering at church. Easter was definitely on my mind.
Yeah.
I never did my lights. Oh, well.
Missed opportunity. Yeah, next year.
Yeah, I'm sure my neighbors are all very annoyed with my cute little lights, but too bad. I like them.
Surprised no one's copied you yet, Ruben, trendsetter.
Oh, well, you know what? I did it during awful weather. Just wait. If I was smart, I would have done it when it was nice outside. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. And then I don't know if we, you have something else in your mind, but there is one thing that I wanted to make sure we touched on, which is one of my all-time favorite experiments of yours that has to do with plumbing.
Oh my gosh. I know where you're going.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you set it up?
Okay. So I appreciate your curiosity, Ruben, and you've always been willing to try to set something up to test it, you know, a theory or, an idea. And so you do a lot of experiments with plumbing, I think, and you have this archive of videos, which I think, you know, you've posted a lot of them on YouTube and use a lot of the content for blogs, but I stumbled across a video that is my all-time favorite video of yours that I incorporated into our training process. So all of our instructors were forced to watch it. It was quite enjoyable, though. And it came from, I think, a series of tests you did on air admittance valves.
Yeah.
And whether or not they will fail or they work or not. And one of the reasons for that being is that Minnesota does not allow for, the plumbing code does not allow for mechanical vents.
Yeah.
In the plumbing system, the plumbing vent has to go up and out through the roof. And so when, you know, when a home inspector comes across a mechanical vent, you know, we call it out, and let the home buyer know about it, why it's a big deal or not. And in this experiment, you were testing to see, you know, why is it a problem? Why doesn't Minnesota code approve of this? Are these mechanical vents, do they fail? Will they leak, you know, sewer gases out? What's going on with that? So, okay, you take it away, Ruben. What did you find out?
Okay, so I put together my own, and I had heard that if there's a lot of back pressure, it'll actually fail. And so I put together my own little tube, and I put a air admittance valve on there, and I thought, okay, I'm going to pressurize this. So I connected it to my air compressor, but before I did it, I wanted to prove that it was functioning. So I held it up to my mouth and I just sucked on it to show that there's air coming through. And I did that shortly after I had glued everything together. And the fumes I inhaled from that were just toxic. And I coughed. I mean, I coughed hard. I was like, oh my gosh, there's gas in there. And then I get super lightheaded. Like, I mean, I was high. And so I continued on with the experiment, not thinking clearly. And I hooked up this contraption to my air compressor and I just opened it up all the way. Now, my air compressor gives PSI of about like 100 or something like that. And the typical pressure that you're supposed to have in a plumbing system, I mean, if you test that system with one, I think it's a half inch of water column. I don't even know how many PSIs that is. I don't know how to do the conversion. I mean, maybe one or two, something like that.
Not much pressure.
Not much. So whatever it was, hooking up 100 PSI for my air compressor was just stupid. The second I open this thing, it explodes like right in my face. The thing hits the floor joist, and my wife, she's outside gardening, and she could hear it. And she's like, what is he doing? I'm not even going down there.
She heard the explosion and she's like, oh, Ruben, he's at it again.
Yeah. And I can't remember what the sequence was, but I tried doing it again and it kept leaking. And I thought I was just going to have a little bit of air coming out and it kept leaking. So I went to shut the valve off, but instead I opened the valve all the way. It explodes in my face again.
I'm still recording.
Yeah. And then I don't remember what the situation was, but it happened a third time too. It exploded in my face three times before I made a successful video, and I had the camera rolling for all of it. So at the end of my video, I've got the blooper reel. You can watch it explode in my face over and over again.
Oh man.
We'll be sure to put the link in the show notes for this.
We'll put a link to this video for anyone that wants to watch it. It's a classic and it's very enjoyable. Ruben, I've also never seen you look that upset. You're so mad. By the third time, you were just pissed.
Yeah, I was coming down off my high, I'm pretty sure. And
Man, that was a classic. Oh, but you did do a couple other good plumbing experiments that I thought were really interesting. One of them had to do with a vented or an unvented fixture. Do you want to do a quick recap on that?
Well, you know, we've heard people say so many times that something isn't draining well or it's draining slowly because it's not properly vented. And so I set up an experiment where I set up a laundry sink and I had a drain going out the side of my house, going down about 10 feet, connected it to that. And I filled it up with water and I let it drain with both a vent and without a vent. And I did the same thing at my kitchen sink. So it's not just staged. This is an actual kitchen sink. And I cut into my vent. And I blocked it off. I've got an island vent.
You did? You cut into your vent? You didn't go onto the roof and cap it?
No. I just went right at the sink.
Oh, my gosh.
It was probably wintertime, and I didn't want to go up there. And so I capped it off right at the sink. And you know what? Fixtures actually drain faster when they're not vented. And
that was the key. That's the takeaway from that. That was very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is that you've got all of the water going down another story or whatever it is, and all of that water leaving creates a siphon action where it wants to pull the rest of the water in that fixture out. And so it sucks like crazy. And that's why you need a vent, is to prevent that siphoning and prevent that water from getting sucked out so fast that it clears out the trap. That's why you need vents. So it actually pulls the water through faster when you don't have a vent. So you hear that home inspector or plumber or handyman folklore, oh, it's not draining well because it's not vented. Not true.
Yeah, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And I think you've got, I don't know if this is posted on YouTube, but it was part of our training process too. Was watching that experiment that you did.
Yeah.
You documented it really well.
It helps to just see this stuff in action and hear what it sounds like, because there's a definite difference in sound between a vented and an unvented fixture. You hear all this gurgling and siphoning, and just to see the difference between the two, it tunes your ears to listen for that, and you have a better understanding of what this means and why it's happening.
Exactly. Nope. Yep. Agreed. Yeah. You've produced some really good content, Ruben, for not only the Structure Tech team of home inspectors, but for just the general population, anyone that wants to understand the nuances of these things, these systems, plumbing, electrical, Christmas lights, whatever. You are a rich resource.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, please.
There we go.
We'll put a link in there. Yeah.
There we go.
In the show notes. Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. Well, I this is going longer than I thought it was going to. Let's just go to two other wins, Tess. Two other good projects.
Two wins.
One of them was installing basically an upside down roof underneath my deck. I got this idea from an article they had in the Family Handyman. There's underdecking that you can buy for a deck. It means that the area under your deck stays nice and dry. They're fairly expensive products. It's this whole kit that's meant to drain that area, but you can do it yourself just using what's basically corrugated steel roofing panels. And you get the right pitch on there and you have them drain into a gutter and to a downspout. You install it underneath your deck and you catch all that water and you got this fantastic dry space underneath your deck. And now it's one of my favorite things to do in the summer. You got like a big lightning storm or something. I like to sit out underneath the deck and just watch it. You got a nice dry space. I absolutely love that. That was a nice project to do. It did not cost me much. Just took a little bit of time to put up the panels.
Huh. If you were hiring a professional, I'm sure it would cost a lot more, right? Just the labor.
Oh, tons. I got.
Did you get estimates?
I don't remember what it was, but I just went, I can do this.
I'm sure you did.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice.
So that was a fun project, and I've had a couple of friends do the same thing to their own decks, and they turned out great. So it's very much a DIY project. And then
very nice.
Okay, last one, and Tessa, sorry, this is going to be the most controversial one. I know you hate these things. Mm. Solar tubes.
Oh, okay. You're looking at me waiting for my reaction.
I love solar tubes. It's, you know, I guess some people might call it the poor man's skylight. Instead of having this big insulated skylight shaft and you got to frame it all and all this to get a ton of light into a room, you basically just install a tube. It's got a lens right at the ceiling. It's got this tube that goes through your attic space. And then it's got this bubble dome thingy that installs, it laps in with your shingles and it lets light in. And it's like having a bright light on in your room, whatever it is. I've done it in the bathrooms at every house I've lived in. And I absolutely love this. It's tons of light. It's natural light. It's an easy installation. And I know the reason Tessa doesn't like them is because that tube is not insulated, but I've never had any issues.
Yeah. You haven't had problems with it creating snow melt or anything like that, leading to ice dams. You know, I'm sure I would actually prefer one of those solar tubes to an actual skylight.
Would you?
Yes, I would. I mean, you know, there's a saying in our industry. What is it? Skylights. There's two types of skylights. skylights that leak and skylights that are going to leak, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen so many of them that do leak and create problems, or you know, you get condensation on them and then the water drips back down. And then also too, it's like you've got this big, you know, cut opening that goes all the way from your conditioned living space up to the roof deck. And if it's not perfectly air sealed or insulated, then of course, you know, you're losing heat. You're creating condensation or moisture problems, mold problems, all of that. And on top of it, if you've got a skylight in a vault or a cathedral ceiling, you're stopping any sort of airflow that could have been happening in that cavity as well, from the soffit up to the peak. And so, number one, you're creating a hole in your roof that water can leak in. Number two, you're losing heat because of that skylight to the roof deck. And number three, you're losing any sort of ventilation if it's a vaulted ceiling. So for all those reasons, yes, I am not a fan. But in some situations, if you got a big attic, if you got an interior room without any natural light, you know, and you've got good attic ventilation and you're installing it and you know that you can air seal it and insulate it, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, something I want to touch on, Tess, you said is, that old saying roofers have, there's two types of skylights. Those that leak, those are going to leak. I did a video and a blog post about that recently where I said, I think the vast majority of skylight leaks, and we're doing quotation mark leaks, are actually building science problems. It's actually condensation happening around it. From all my days of inspecting, I think I found maybe two or three skylights that were actually leaking. All the rest of them with staining around the skylight, around the ceiling, staining in the attic, on almost every single one, I could trace it down to a condensation problem. And of course, people blame the roofer. They think it's leaking, but the vast majority of the time, it's not a leak. It's a condensation problem. It's a building science issue. Yeah. They didn't insulate the skylight shaft properly.
Yeah. Well, and even if you do insulate the skylight shaft, you still have just the glass, where if it's really cold outside and, you know, it's 70 degrees and 30% relative humidity inside, you're going to get condensation on that glass. It's just going to happen. So it's hard to avoid that too.
Sure.
I would think twice about installing a skylight in an extremely cold climate like ours, especially if you have a vaulted ceiling. But other than that, the natural light is great.
I love the natural light. I love it. And in all these cases where I did it in a bathroom, of course, it's a bathroom that doesn't have any windows. I just got to figure out a way to get one of those with a shaft going all the way down to my basement. It ain't going to happen, but I'd love to figure out a way to make it happen. That'd be great.
Oh my gosh. A solar tube going up three stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably won't happen.
Sounds a little Willy Wonka-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Great idea.
That is a show, Tess. We covered a lot of ground here today.
You doubted that we'd be able to fill up a show. And I told you, Ruben, you have enough experiments to fill up a whole series. So thank you for sharing your wins and your quote failures with all of us and making us smarter, wiser, better prepared homeowners.
Well, thanks for listening.
Inspectors, right. Thank you. Thanks, Ruben.
Well, if you have any comments, thoughts on any of this, you got any good stories to share, we would love to hear your wins or failures. Failures are more fun, let's be honest. Please write into the show, podcast@structuretech.com. All right, we'll catch you next week. I'm Ruben Saltzman for Tessa Murray, saying later.